me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to Slow Pitch, a podcast that takes sports movies too seriously, or perhaps not seriously enough. We're your hosts.
Sean Williams. Brad. I always left that part up. You paused for a long
pause time. Pause for you, and then I think he's not going to say anything, and I do. But right. It's comedic. And myself, Brad Etherly, two guys who consider watching sports movies a type of aerobic exercise. Today's episode is a review of the 1986 classic, The Best of Times. Now,
The Best of Times.
I have noticed that I usually start off these podcasts, and I don't mean to do this, but I've noticed that this has become a trend that I usually start off in some fashion like this. So, Sean, The Best of Times.
That's that's your professional podcaster voice.
So, Sean, Air Bud, thoughts? I want to say the first thing before I get into my So Sean. I'm going to state this right here, right now, for the whole world to hear. Kurt Russell is a national treasure and should be considered as such.
100% on board with that, especially this particular era of Kurt Russell. I have no problem with Miracle Kurt Russell or Disney teenager Kurt Russell, but Jack Burton Kurt Russell, Reno Hightower Kurt Russell, that's like prime KR to me.
Yeah, I was wondering as I was watching this, because he kind of turned into a little bit of a bad boy in the 80s with the Reno and the Jack Burton and the Snake. Escape from Snake.
Plissken or Plaskin, Plumpkin, yeah. Whatever his name is.
Call me Snake.
Was he in the Sylvester Stallone movie? Oh, I can't believe I'm
Tango and Cash.
Yes, yeah. Tango and Cash.
Yeah, I don't remember if I actually did research for this podcast, I would know his actual name in Escape from New York.
Yeah.
Snake Plissken. And I would know if he was Tango or Cash.
I've seen that movie several times, but I can't remember.
He was also in Tequila Sunrise.
Yeah.
With Michelle Pfeiffer and one of the Bridges.
But yeah, so I was wondering, like, when did he go from the squeaky clean Disney image of the computer wore tennis shoes to Jack Burton, Reno Hightower, Snake Plissken persona? Because that couldn't have been a terribly easy, but I guess it was the Escape from New York.
Did Goldie Hawn make him go bad boy on us?
I don't know that they were together until...
Well, when was Overboard?
Overboard would have been like 85, 86, somewhere around this time.
And are we considering Captain Ron bad boy Kurt Russell? Because I love that movie.
You know what? That movie, man. Okay, so he was my step-grandfather, but he was more or less a grandfather to me. He had a library of VHS movies that he would record off of like the satellite. So he would have three movies on one VHS and literally had like 1500 movies in this closet of his, but some of them were actual store-bought VHS tapes. So they had the cover and everything. And Captain Ron was one of those. And as I was 13 years old or whatever, the cover of that VHS tape looked so good. It looked so hilarious. But as a 13-year-old, I stuck it in and I was very disappointed in it.
You don't like the movie Captain Ron?
Well, I haven't seen it since then. But yeah, as an 11, 12, 13-year-old, whatever I was, I thought it was going to be wacky funny, and it wasn't. I was expecting, like, you know, the gods must be crazy type stuff, you know?
Yeah, it is more of a family comedy. But like now that I'm looking at the at some of the stills from it, he has a patch over his eye like Snake Plissken.
He does. I don't know what I thought it was going to be like, but I thought it was going to be more zany, like a Police Academy type. Oh, I was really into the Police Academy movies at that time, which is probably severely inappropriate. But
and I guess Martin Short's name in the movie was Martin, because on the cover of the movie, first off, you know how they give quotes from critics on the cover I'm looking at. It just says funny. It says funny exclamation point, New York Newsday.
Hilarious.
And then it says funny. Kurt Russell, Martin Short. And then the line on it says, Martin just wanted a nice, quiet family vacation. Instead, he got Captain Ron. And Kurt Russell is wearing shades and loving every bit of his life.
That's great. See, I even forgot that Marty Short was in that movie. So,
it's been
a long time since I've seen it. But is there any way we could make an argument that sailing is a sports movie?
Yeah,
yachting.
It takes skill, and there is an America's Cup that people go nuts for.
Well, maybe we can squeeze it in somehow.
Yeah.
What a great movie. I mean, I had seen this movie also when I was probably 15 or 16. Uh-huh. And I was left a little disappointed in it when I watched it back then as well. I don't know what.
Are you talking about Best of Times?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm back on Best of Times. Yeah. And I think that I expected Robin Williams. That was before I found Robin Williams kind of annoying.
Yeah.
And I kind of expected him to be funnier. And he tries a little bit, but it's before like Robin Williams became Robin Williams that was so annoying.
Okay, so this is post-Mork.
Yeah.
But in like, you know, Mork was kind of untethered Robin Williams.
Yeah.
And we see some untethered Robin Williams in like Mrs. Doubtfire, or what's the Disney movie?
So we had a little bit of technical difficulty, and we're going to just start afresh at this point. Let's get into the movie a little bit. It starts off with a crazy kind of sequence of events, kind of giving a background about the history of Taft, California, which is an actual town in California. And I just remember, I didn't take any notes on it, but I just remember thinking, this is one of the craziest beginnings of a movie I've ever seen, as far as like just a contextual piece to it. And they get through it, and they basically explain that Taft High School has had a football team, you know, for a very long time, and they're not very good. I guess their biggest rival is Bakersfield, and they always lose, 84-0 is the joke.
Yeah.
I guess in 1972, they had a chance to win because they had Kurt Russell as the quarterback, who is Reno Hightower, and he was supposed to be this amazing quarterback, and they had a chance to win it. He threw this pass. He got clobbered by the defense and messed up his knees, but the pass was hanging in the air, and Robin Williams was the third string wide receiver that was there to catch the ball, and he muffs it. The one chance that Taft has to win against Bakersfield is ruined. And 13 years later, a 31-year-old Robin Williams, or Jack, I don't even know what Jack's last name was, is sitting in a closet at work watching this.
Jack Dundee,
that's right. Yeah. He's just sitting in an office, in a closet in his office, watching this 16mm film over and over and over again. He is obviously obsessing over this. Oh, and he's like a nerd, a 1986 nerd. He's buttoned up. He's got, you know, Buddy Holly glasses on.
Works at a bank.
And so we're introduced to him as this obsessed nerd. And then we're immediately introduced to his wife, who is the daughter of the owner of the bank, the colonel. That's all we know him as, is the colonel. And he might have been my favorite character of the whole movie, to be honest with you. Kurt Russell aside, he was hilarious. But yeah, he's just a whipping boy. He's got the job because of his father-in-law. His father-in-law can't stand him, and he's just obsessed about this game. The funny thing to me about Robin Williams is, and this was kind of, I started to realize it when he went to Reno. Hightower's now owns a garage and he fixes vans, custom vans, paints them with beautiful artistic renderings. And I noticed that Jack Dundee almost speaks in the King's English at times.
Yeah, that's
they're trying so hard to show that he's a nerd. And he's like, I shall not think about this until I get your vehicle or whatever.
Yeah, it's I wonder if that's like some of Robin Williams' affectation too.
Sure. So he's obsessed about this game. Kurt Russell seems to just be a happy-go-lucky, I don't care about anything kind of guy. But they show, so he apparently, Jack Dundee, Robin Williams, goes to this shop like every week and asks for a loaner car while his car is getting fixed. And they make a joke about him going to the massage therapy girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so,
like a hooker.
Yeah. I mean, it's shown that she's just a prostitute basically. But they show him actually doing that and he gets there. And did you notice he actually gets undressed to just talk about his feelings with this girl?
Yeah. He says, I'm emotionally naked in front of you at one point. And I believe that this prostitute that he goes and visits, I know that she's Michael J. Fox's aunt in Secret of My Success, but I think she may also be the owner in Major League, the female owner. I think so.
Okay.
I'm going to have to do some IMDb checking on that, but I believe so.
Well, the only reason, it's not a significant scene except to further show that he's obsessed about this game. He takes all of his clothes off except for his underwear. And did you happen to notice how big his underwear were? He was, I don't know if they were briefs or boxers because I couldn't tell. They looked like briefs. They were white.
Let me tell you something. If I were on a movie set, I would probably be asking for large underwear as well, just for a variety of reasons.
But I'm pretty sure they were briefs that went down to his knees. They were huge. But yeah, he gets naked for no real reason. Well, not naked, but down to his skivvies.
Yeah.
And just to sit there and have her play psychologist, basically. But then she gets in bed with him.
Yeah. And I don't, like, while we're discussing having to remove your clothing, just earlier today, I had to go to the dermatologist. Mm-hmm. And I was telling my wife this. It's strange because I feel really self-conscious because the dermatologist that I go to is an attractive female. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I point that out is because I have to remove my clothing in front of her. And it's not a deal where it's like, oh, I wish, like, she needs to think I'm good looking so she'll be attracted to me. Not that at all. It's, I don't want her judging me. Like, if she was 700 pounds and hairy and had like boils, then I would be able to be like, hey, I'm doing pretty good here. But I have an attractive woman kind of like looking at me, and I imagine her leaving the room and just immediately vomiting like, for everything she's had to witness.
Chuckling lightly.
Yeah, or just like, oh, poor guy. But she did say this, and it cracked me up so much. I was jogging recently, and I don't know, I did something to my toe to where it kind of jacked one of my big toenails up a little bit. And so it's like there was a bruise underneath it, and it's in the process of healing. And this doctor, you know, she uses very this really strict medical terminology. And she said, she sees this toenail and she goes, did you traumatize this toenail? And I was like, did I traumatize it? I was like, you mean, did I like get drunk and tell it was never going to amount to anything or neglect it or, you know, lock it in a closet? Yeah.
Never going to amount to anything.
It's officially traumatized. Anyway, Robin Williams also had his clothes off in front of a female.
I've done that before at a dermatologist, and it's unsettling.
Yeah. She also has her assistant who's like taking notes in the corner. Yeah. And so she's like looking at me. She holds my arm up and she says, we have some mild to medium freckling on the arms and shoulders. I'm assuming that that is not sexy to anybody. The mild to medium freckling.
That's hilarious. But yeah, that's the only reason I even brought that scene up is because of the unknown quality of his underwear. I could not tell if they were supposed to be boxers or briefs. And this is before boxer briefs. So anyways, but he gets this great idea from her, I guess, that why can't you just play the game again? And so he goes to his father-in-law, Donald Moffat, or the Colonel, and suggests this to him because I guess he's a big Bakersfield High booster or something. And I loved his office because it just shows his office as a normal office with a desk and everything. And he's kind of, they're going back and forth. And then he walks over to stage right, and there's a life-size cutout of a football player.
Yes. Yeah. Just randomly.
In his bank office, I actually didn't have a whole lot of notes because I was just enjoying the movie so much. It was a great movie with a lot of subtleties, I think.
Well, first off, Margaret Witten is who played the prostitute, and she was the man, not the manager, but the owner in Major League.
Yeah.
And Vera Prescott, who plays Michael J. Fox's aunt in Secret of My Success. So that's just
we'll see her FYI. Again.
Yes,
in Major League.
Well, and also, yeah, and you know, this is this movie was written by Ron Shelton, who also wrote Bull Durham, I believe. And maybe White Men Can't Jump too.
Did he write that as well?
Yeah, I know he Great White Hype. Yeah.
Oh, he wrote the Great White Hype too.
I think so. Yeah.
Oh man, we're gonna have a lot of this guy.
Yeah. Well, okay. Like the thing, this is just sort of an overall comment, just in general about the movie. I think I was texting you this. You said you were enjoying it, and I was too. Like Air Bud, I was enjoying how ridiculous it was.
Sure.
I was enjoying how flimsy the storyline was and
he's right!
And all that. But this one, even though Robin Williams may not be at his peak powers, I think Kurt Russell is at his peak powers. The movie does kind of tap into something that we all probably think about, like what if we could go back and fix this one thing, change the trajectory of our lives. And for Robin Williams, he bobbled this catch, and that has haunted him for 13 years. And so he's trying to make it right, which I guess we're about to get into that. But
well, so let me ask you this, and let's keep it strictly to sports history for each of us. But if you could go back and change anything in your sports life, do you have anything that that you would change?
Yeah, getting into a game at some point. Nah, let's see. Yeah, a lot of my sports, big sports moments came before the age of like 12. But yeah, I guess there was that's tough. I guess maybe there's probably some basketball game where, I got it. There was, I didn't have like a moment where I just like completely blundered something like Robin Williams did in the opening scenes of this. But when I was in high school, we were playing this team that had a guy who was getting ready. He had been recruited by Oklahoma State. And ironically, his name was Adrian Peterson. And he went on to play all 4 years at Oklahoma State, but we had some guys suspended from school. And so, you know, I was able to get off my usual spot at the very end of the bench and actually play a lot of minutes in this game. And I actually hit 1 3-pointer, but I was so nervous and jacked up to be in the game at all that I banked it from the top of the key. But yeah, just so like, I was just sort of like nervous and jittery that entire game. So I kind of wish I could go back and be in that moment in that game, but with the calm perspective of someone who knows that a high school basketball game doesn't really matter, and just play a lot more chilled out.
Here's a question for you. When you played high school basketball, did you play it because you loved basketball, or did you play it because you wanted to impress girls, or a combination of both?
It can be both.
It can be both.
okay, I did love basketball. I thought it was a really fun sport. And I knew that the possibility existed to impress girls with it. Now, having said that, I don't know how many girls are impressed with a guy who is five slots down on the bench, who, you know, gets in with 40 seconds to go and when we're up or down by 50. But yeah. So the potential was there. If you were to take a poll of girls that I went to high school with and be like, how attracted were you to Sean Williams based on the fact that he was on the basketball team? They'd be like, what? Who's Sean Williams? He was on the basketball team. I never saw him in a game. I think that would be the response.
Yeah. So I've got answers to both of those questions as well then. So the one thing I think I would go back and change was my senior year. I graduated high school. I was 6'6". But I only weighed 160 pounds. So I was literally skin and bones. In fact, there's a picture from my senior yearbook of us in a huddle. Of course, I'm on the outside of the huddle because I'm deemed unnecessary. You know, we still had the short shorts. This would have been 93, 94. And so we would wear the spandex underneath the shorts so that we didn't show the world our stuff when we sat down on the bench. At least that was why I wore them. But in that picture, literally the spandex are loose on my thighs. So that's how skinny I was. But I was 6'6", yeah. And I could dunk. Not well, but I could. And so one game I had, it was against Second Baptist in Houston.
Those scumbags.
I know, those jerks. I was actually playing for some reason, and there was a shot, and I went up. It was a Second Baptist player shot the ball. I went up to grab the rebound, but it just kind of hung on the rim, and I was already up there, and I was literally like, I can't not touch this ball. And so it was literally hanging on the rim. I knew it was going to be a defensive goaltending, but I was already up there, and I already touched it, and so I just decided to slam it home. And so that was the only slam dunk I had in my high school career. And so I just wish that that could somehow be reversed and it could have actually counted for an offensive goal instead of 2 points for the other team.
Okay. I was like, did you dunk it on behalf of the other team?
I was already pushing it down it back into the goal. And so I was just like, well, I might as well just dunk it.
I'm imagining the Price is Right trombone playing like.
It was funny because I actually knew one of the guys on the other team, and the refs, for whatever reason, were kind of flummoxed by what was happening. They didn't know what to do, really. And so they kind of huddled.
It doesn't say anywhere in the rule book that you can't dunk it on behalf of the other team.
He's right.
This dog just came out of nowhere and dunked it. Both teams are kind of huddled or just kind of milling around half court while the refs are talking about it. And the other guy that I actually knew, he was like, just give Brad the 2 points. It was him. He's the only one who can jump that high. But yeah, I just wish it had actually been something that could have counted towards 2 points for my team.
Were cheerleaders and stuff running up to you like, hey, Brad, amazing dunk?
No, that's the other thing. So I also did not play very much, as evidenced by the previous story. I wasn't very good. So my only real time to shine was during pregame warmups.
Oh, yeah.
And so while Pump Up the Jams was playing on the loudspeaker, you couldn't dunk in a pregame or else you'd get a T. And so I would do like my best imitation of a George Gervin finger roll, like get right up to the rim and then just kind of lay it in.
Yeah.
But knowing now that I was 6'6", 160,
right. It's almost like I can hear it happening right now.
Yes. Getting me back in the groove. Watch out, Brad.
Yeah. Here he is.
Finger roll that. Yeah. We listened to that, and we listened to Jump by Van Halen. This is in 1994, 10 years after Jump was popular.
Yeah.
And we would also go into Enter Sandman by Metallica. Anyway, so yeah, that was when I was like, hey, these cheerleaders are going to be impressed that I can finger roll this ball into this net. They were not. And I also went to a school of like 50 people. I knew everybody. They did not care about me. To get back to the best of times, this is what Robin Williams wants to do. He wants to replay this game. He goes to the colonel, and the colonel laughs at him, and he goes to Reno Hightower and proposes it to him. And just as a sidebar, the town of Taft is in bad shape. They've seen, you know, their downtown is struggling. Nobody really, you know, cares about anything, but Robin Williams is really trying to get this done. Kurt Russell doesn't care, but Jack kind of persuades different people at different times. And I forgot what the big thing was that he did.
Well, so they, for some reason, there was a random performance by the wives of some 50s tune. They went to high school in the 70s, but they performed like a 50s tune. Yes. And then there's like a meeting of the Loyal Order of Water Buffaloes.
Well, before that even, the colonel calls Jack up, and he's got like all the football guys in the room. And he's like making fun of Jack, and he's like, yeah, we're not interested. We are, ha, 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 and everybody laughs. But the greatest thing is the mascot. It's just sitting in the office on a couch.
I know. There are lots of like random funny things in this movie.
He's just sitting there, full costume. Yeah. So go back to the 50s singing.
Yeah. I have no clue why there's just this scene where Jack's wife and Hightower's wife and a couple of other of their female friends do this kind of doo-wop performance in front of a hall of people or like a restaurant.
No, they're at the Safari Club. It's Safari Bowling.
Safari Club, that's right. Yeah, that's right. But why are they performing? I have no clue.
She wants to be a singer. She leaves Reno at the beginning of the movie because she wants to be a singer. But she stays Taft and is singing at the Safari.
Oh, that's right.
Bowling / Safari Club.
It still doesn't make sense why
she's singing My Boyfriend's
Robin Williams'
Back.
Wife. Yeah, it's in like there was a whole because later on they have a, not to spoil anything, but they do end up replaying this football game. And they have a dance the night before, and even the dance is like 1950s. And like I'm like, none of these people went to high school in the 50s. They went to high school in the 70s. Yeah. So they should be playing like Led Zeppelin.
Well, so Jack gets this brilliant idea to turn the town against Bakersfield. And I don't know how he finds the exact mascot costume, but he does. And he dresses up as the tiger for Bakersfield, starts vandalizing the town, throws paint all over the bank, is writing graffiti everywhere that Taft sucks and all this, and then walks into the Safari Club as the tiger and throws paint on all the women that are singing, and then runs out. And so everybody gets riled up and they're ready to fight Bakersfield. And so then another great scene is where he is basically trying to get the Elks Lodge, or no, this is the Order of the Caribou, I think is what it was called. But it was basically like an Elks Lodge group to, I guess, condone the playing of this game. I don't know why they needed the Order of the Caribou.
Yeah, I mean, this is, the Order of the Caribou run Taft, apparently. The mayor has no say in it. But yeah, my guess there was that somehow the Order of the Caribou were going to fund the, purchasing of uniforms and
gotcha. I must have missed that.
Hiring of refs or something. I don't know that they said it explicitly, but I give this movie a lot of leeway because it's good in so many areas.
That meeting is hilarious. I mean, from top to bottom, that whole meeting, I was just dying. I thought it was hilarious, but they decide not to support it basically. But then I forget, was it after that is when he went and did the paint stuff and they decided to go ahead and support it. So yeah.
Well, and we have neglected to mention, as part of the Taft, California history, there was a boxing match that took place between, I can't remember the guy's name, like Kid Lester from Taft, and then some other boxer who I guess was from Bakersfield. And Kid Lester like fled in disgrace. He lost, and then he ended up leaving the town in disgrace. No one ever saw him again. But doesn't he show back up at that Order of the Caribou meeting?
Is he in that?
Well, he's obviously at the very end.
I just know that at the very end, they just show this random old guy all of a sudden. And I was like, who is this guy? Like, he wasn't a part of the movie at all. Maybe he was in the Order of the Caribou. Yeah. I don't remember.
I think he was. I think he like says something that sort of turns the tide a little bit towards Robin Williams' favor in terms of playing the game. But obviously neither of us were paying that close attention because there's a million hilarious parts during that.
And there were a lot of characters that were getting a lot of screen time too in that meeting. And so it was kind of hard to keep up, but it was also funny because I now work for the city of Great Falls and in Montana. And there's a lot of there's this whole thing called Robert's Rules of Order or something like that. And I guess every municipality probably does this, but like they have to have seconds to motions and they have to
like parliamentary procedure.
Yeah, right? It really is. And so when I first started, like even like the most insignificant group or commission that you might think of still does this. And they like have to have, you know, public comment and they have to have motions and all this stuff. And so it was just kind of fun to watch these guys take that so seriously, because when I first started working for the city and I was hearing this all the time, I was like, what the heck? Why are they doing this? This is not that formal. But to see them be like, I second the second motion and second and all that stuff was funny.
Motion's on the floor. Any motion according to our charter needs a second. I have a second?
Second.
Furthermore, any motion from an outside party not on the agenda as defined by our bylaws requires a second before discussion. We want discussion. Second.
Discussion. Second.
But yeah, so they decide to support this game. They get the whole team back together, which there were several members of the team that were from out of town. They had moved away. And I was just thinking, like, realistically, like, how do you get a grown man now to come back to play this game, but not just play the game, but spend weeks training for it? Like, what is this? And I also thought, because they show several training montages, and they all look like they're 45 and fat and balding. And I'm like, okay, this is 1985-ish. They went to school in 1972. If they were playing football in 1972, they were anywhere between 15 and 18 years old. Now they're anywhere between 28 and 31. They're not exactly you know, over the hill, balding fat guys necessarily.
I know.
But it was just funny. And I also, as I was watching the training montages, when did sweats become not a thing anymore? Sweats are not used like they used to be.
Well, and also in the 80s, because Robin Williams trains in this, he's got the sweats, then he has the shorts on over the sweats.
Yes, I know. But they're sweat shorts over the sweatpants.
Yeah, it's like he's covering like the Superman region of his groin. It's like, hey, I need to keep this part extra warm, the groinal region.
Yeah, and so during these training montages, you keep seeing Robin Williams do this like four tops move where he kind of spins, and it's introduced earlier in the movie where he's like about to get down with his wife and he's like, I got a new move for you. It's like Sam Cooke or whatever. And he does this spin, pulls his jacket down, throws it off. And so that's kind of introduced early, which, by the way, his wife, Ellie, Holly Palance, is Jack Palance's daughter, which I was kind of surprised about. Also, I was kind of attracted
she's
to
good
her.
Looking. Yeah, she's good looking. Well, hey, she brought that Sam Cooke move out of Robin Williams. So,
hey. But anyway, so in the training montages, you see him doing this move over and over, and like the football is being thrown to him and it's hitting him in the head because he's more focused on the spin. And I got to say, I did not think that was going to play a part until the very moment before when he did it in the game. And it was like, oh, he's about to do the spin move.
Yeah, that includes, it's not just the spin move. It has a hand motion as well. He's kind of rolling the gospel chariot as he spins, which I think is integral.
Oh my gosh. But the funny thing about that, and it's a little bit of a head, we're getting to the game a little bit, but he does the spin move on the defensive player the first time to get open. But did you notice that as he's running down the field, he does it again for no reason?
Yeah. Is this the time where he was offside?
No. That was the first play of the for him.
Yeah,
I guess he got put in the game, but it was the one that eventually led to the winning touchdown.
He's in the clear. Yeah.
Dr. Death is against him. He's playing against Dr. Death. Right. He spun. Dr. Death falls into the mud. He runs in about 15 yards down the field. He does it again.
At that point, he's just wasting energy and time. To give everyone context, there's like 2 seconds left in the game. They have to have a touchdown to score. Robin Williams, he has one job, get to the end zone and catch the ball. And he's twirling his hands and his feet. He's on his way to the end zone. You'll have to watch the movie to understand what we're talking about.
Going back to before the big game. So they, through the whole movie, both of them are experiencing problems with their wives. Jack has left because all he can think about is the big game, and his wife Ellie is tired of it. And so she's like, I'm done. You're out. So he goes to the Top Hat Inn, which is where Reno's wife is also. But one little thing that I thought was hilarious about him walking into the Top Hat Inn was he had his suitcase or whatever, but he also had a coffee pot. That was the only thing he brought was his suitcase and a coffee pot. And I thought that was just another subtle, funny thing to me. In the course of the movie, they are trying, both Reno and Jack are trying to get back with their wives. And so they're able to set up this dinner with their wives. And basically the rules are no football talk and no sex. Yeah. That's the two rules.
And it's on a Monday night. It's on a Monday night.
It was Atlanta and who?
Minnesota.
Minnesota?
Yeah.
Which I love seeing those old uniforms, man.
I know.
So they can't stop thinking about football. And Robin Williams, I was just like, dude, you could score with your wife, but you're more interested in some stupid Monday night football game.
Between two horrible things.
Because everything's going swimmingly. Yeah, everything is going great. Like, the wives are like a little H-y for their husbands. And they're kind of, you know, ready to go to town. And
that's saying something, given that Kurt Russell is wearing the tie he was wearing. He's wearing like a Colonel Sanders tie in that scene.
Yeah, it's the bolo tie.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's a bolo. Like, is that a bolo tie? Where it's basically tied in a bolo tie has like a little metal thing.
Well, that's true. Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of like a Yosemite Sam.
Yeah. Yosemite Sam or what Colonel Sanders wears.
Yeah. I don't know what kind of tie that's called. Actually, but he's dressed ridiculously, which is also funny. Yeah. But the wives are feeling it, like they're ready to go. And then Robin Williams has to turn the TV on the football game and also can't just watch it without like
commenting,
exclaiming, great, great pass. Yeah.
Well, this scene is one of the scenes that I remember from seeing this movie as a kid, because I remember thinking it was really funny when something happens in the game and Robert Williams is like, oh man. And his wife's like, what? And he goes, cold hands. You got those cold hands. And I remember thinking that was just so funny.
Oh, your little cold hands.
That he was trying to cover that up. It's called a string bow tie. Just FYI for.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Kurt Russell is wearing a string bow tie.
He looks pretty amazing in it too.
He does. I mean, it's doing the trick for his wife as well.
It really is. And
yeah. And so, for me in this movie, like there were lots of like subtle, funny things. There were three really solid scenes that absolutely made me laugh. And one was the Order of the Caribou meeting when they're deciding whether or not to have the football game. The training montages cracked me up for numerous reasons. And like when Kurt Russell is saying, okay, you're the twig, you're the rot, whatever. And they get it mixed up. Kurt Russell's reactions to his idiot players are funny to me. And then, and then this scene where they are trying to act like actual human beings and pay attention to their wives, but they just can't do it. As idiotic as it is, it cracked me up.
I almost just got annoyed with it in a way because I was like, you could do both. Like you, if you really have to watch this football game, okay, you've set it up to where they can't see it and you can, and things are going great with your wife. They are wanting to, you know, throw down with each of you, but all you can think about is Atlanta, Minnesota, and you can't even watch it without being quiet. Like, That's horrible. Like, just get over the football game. So, yeah, it just really annoyed me. I wanted to punch Robin Williams right then. Because Kurt Russell was playing it cool. He was kind of I don't really want this.
They play that out through the entire movie. Robin Williams is kind of high-strung.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell is this, like, laid-back guy who wouldn't be caught dead in an actual suit and tie. He works in a garage. He paints vans. At one point,
Princess Di.
Yeah, I know. And one of them was like Van. Oh, it was Van Gogh. It was Starry Night or something. Yeah. And it said Van VAN-GO Van Gogh on the side of a van.
Yep, that's
It's Reno
that's
Hightower.
Clever, right
Reno
there.
Reno Hightower at his best.
Do you think Reno Hightower is, and really Kurt Russell through the mid-80s? Do you think he's cocky or is he just confident? Because he's got that kind of that look about him, like devil may care. I'm great and I know it, but he's also still charming. And so when I watch him, I'm trying to think, is he trying to play a cocky guy? I mean, like Big Trouble in Little China, I think he's cocky. He's trying to play a cocky guy. But in this movie, I think it was a little bit more, again, subtle. And I think he was just playing like, I really don't care about anything, but if I did, I could kill it.
Yeah.
Kind of guy.
Well, do you remember years ago we rented Big Trouble Little China, like the DVD, and we were listening to the Kurt Russell commentary on it? Do you remember this?
I remember. I don't really remember anything about the commentary though.
I just remember us thinking, after listening to him just talk, like, how do we hang out with this guy in some way, shape, or form? And it's just because who he is, I think he is completely confident and he can kind of crank it up to cocky, which is Jack Burton, or dial it back a little bit. Because to me, Reno Hightower is the less idiotic version of Jack Burton.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's confident, but he's not cocky, and the cockiness is hilarious. That's what makes Jack Burton and Big Trouble Little China hilarious. But so it might be two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, but anyway, so they fail with the women because Robin Williams can't contain himself, and I guess the next scene is the dance. And I didn't really have anything to say about the dance except for
why are
they it was funny it? That. Well, why are they having it first? Yes. But I thought it was funny, too, that Ellie, the wife of Robin Williams, was a full 6 inches taller than Robin Williams. And they did not care to try to, you know, rectify that by having him stand on a box or anything.
Yeah.
And at one point, they're in a bathroom together and they've kind of smoothed things over and they're hugging each other. And Holly Palance kisses Robin Williams like on the eyebrow. Like she's so much taller than him. It's like how I might kiss my wife.
Yeah.
And I thought that was funny. I don't think it was meant to be funny, but I found it funny.
Yeah. Natural comedy.
That was really the only takeaway I had from the dance scene, to be completely honest.
Yeah. I think they just needed a reason to have everybody together that wasn't the football game. Cause like I guess the town decided like, hey, if we're going to put on this football game, might as well have a dance. But this is what kind of I noticed too. At no point do we actually get any perspective or see anybody from the actual high school team, like the current players. The current school doesn't seem to be involved with it. It's just the Taft Rockets versus the Bakersfield, whatever they are, Wildcats or whatever.
Oh, man.
But
you just made me think about that rocket going through town.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the dance is not a cheap dance to put on. It's like they have a replica of a rocket, and that's how you enter and leave the dance. It's through this rocket, and there's a band. They've hired a band to play, and it's attended only by people in their 30s and 40s. There's no young people at this dance, and they're playing 50s music again. No Gary Glitter
again. Yeah. That rocket. So the town, just as they're doing these training montages, they show other montages of the town itself. This game has rejuvenated the town. They're fixing the old theater. They're painting and putting new awnings up on the buildings downtown. And all throughout these montages, you just see this big green rocket going through town with just emitting a crap ton of green smoke.
I know. They're rejuvenating the town, but also putting all sorts of CO2 into the air.
Exactly. But anyway, so they get to the big game and things are going horribly the first half. Reno's getting sacked. Nobody's doing anything. And Bakersfield is just running all over them. And I think the score was something like 24-0 at halftime. And it started to rain really hard right before halftime. And so they go into the locker room, and this is where Robin Williams decides to kind of fess up to Reno. After the rest of the team had gone back out to the field, Robin Williams opens up his duffel bag, which has the mascot head in the duffel bag, and Reno sees it and confronts Robin Williams about it, gets all mad. This is the classic high school move of hanging Robin Williams on a hook so that he can't get down.
Right, yeah.
And somehow Robin Williams is able to talk Reno Hightower into actually giving a crap about this game. And actually, you know, despite the fact that he set all of this up, Reno is ready to ride or die for the Taft Rockets now. So much to the point that he opens up his locker and he gets the white shoes out, gets the Converse out, gets the white Converse cleats out. And that is a big deal.
Which, by the way, they aren't very white by the time he actually gets out to the field, because it's like there's a huge rainstorm.
Yeah, so the field is already like just a big mud pile. And as soon as he walks out, everybody else is like, he's got the white cleats. He's got the white cleats. And they get all goosebumpy, and immediately they turn brown.
I know.
So he gets in the second half, and guess what? They start scoring touchdowns, and things are going Taft's way. So then it's like 24-20 or something like that, with Bakersfield on top. And Reno calls, I don't even remember. How did Jack get out of the hook? Do you remember that? How did he get down from the locker? Because he left him up there.
Yeah, maybe that running back guy let him down or something.
Yeah. But anyways, he's on the sidelines. Reno calls him over and puts him in the game and is like, people are here to see you either catch that ball or drop that ball. And, you know, you're going to get it. So sure enough.
That's a good point this game is so well attended. I think there are actual major college football games that may not be this well attended. And there is a huge monsoon that comes through Taft and just complete, like Brad said, completely muddies the field, soaks everybody. There's lightning, rain. And sure enough, second half, the stands are equally as filled as they ever were. Like nobody went home. Nobody said,
nobody
was like, hey, this is too much. They are that bored in Taft.
They are invested in this game.
Ride or die.
Which, by the way, apparently Herm Edwards was an extra in that game. Yeah.
So he knows. Yeah.
That's according to IMDb. Yeah,
you play to win the game. Even if it's an exhibition. You play
to win the game.
Even if it's an exhibition game 13 years after you've graduated.
Yes. That leads us to Jack lining up against Dr. Death. Don't really know Dr. Death's backstory, but I'd like to know it. And he gets pummeled the first two times he goes up against him. And then that's when I was like, the third time when Jack was like, come at me, I got a move for you or whatever. I was like, callback to Sam Cooke. We're going to get the spin move. And sure enough, he gives a spin move. He gives a second spin right. move. And the ball is thrown. I liked how they didn't really let you know. Of course, he bobbles it a few times. But they didn't just like let him bobble it and then pull it in. They actually kind of made it to where it kind of slid back behind his back and was kind of looking like he might lose it that way. But eventually he grabs
they milked it. They milked it for everything it was worth. And yep. I was like, oh, surely he's run into the end zone by now. But by the time he actually secures it, he's still got like 10 yards to go.
Well, if he hadn't have done that second spin, he'd have been there. So then, so throughout the big game, they keep cutting back to this old guy. And I thought he was just like a townie from like maybe the Order of the Caribou or something. But like the last scene, Reno gives Jack his head nod, you know, to be like, hey, good job, whatever. And they kind of walk off. And then you just see this old guy just like taking in the field and like looking at the destruction that has been caused by the rain in the football game. And then he turns around and walks off and he's got this Kid Lester jacket on. And I was like, come on guys.
I know.
That's one way to end this movie.
There's a few,
it's not the greatest.
There's a few things that separate this movie, like keep it from being great. It's a good movie. It's enjoyable. It's certainly better than Air Bud, but yeah, the Kid Lester thing, they just tried to shoehorn that in.
Well, that's kind of the movie. It really kind of ends there. Do you have anything else you want to talk about? Anything to fill in?
No, other than I genuinely like this movie. And a lot of that is me genuinely liking Kurt Russell and this era of Kurt Russell. This era of Robin Williams is fine. But if you have Robin Williams, but no Kurt Russell in this movie, does not work.
You know, I was a big Robin Williams fan with Mork, and then even like Popeye when he did that. And I guess if I had to go back and look at what I liked about Robin Williams later on, it would be more of his Dead Poets Society kind of roles and Good Will Hunting kind of roles. His other movies where he was just being as goofy as he could be, I got to the point where I couldn't take it anymore. But Kurt Russell, I know he's not as active as he used to be, but man, I still love that guy. He is the coolest dude. And he's married to Goldie Hawn too. That's not bad. Which, by the way, can't wait to watch Wildcats. That's one I'm excited about.
I know. Well, and whether we do it as part of this podcast or not, but Captain Ron, you need to give it a second tumble.
Yeah, I'll look at it. I'll see if it's worthy of being a sports movie. But so let us go ahead and give it a rating. And I think my favorite just incidental moment throughout the film was seeing that life-size cutout of a former high school football player. I don't know. I guess he either played in college or played in the pros or something. Yeah. But, you know, it was like a what are those big, a fat head. It was like a fat head right. before they had fat heads.
Right.
Based on that, 1 out of 5, how many full-size cutout football players would you give this movie?
I'm going to give it 4. 4 cutouts. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like, I was never bored. There's, like I said, there's 3 really funny scenes. Kurt Russell is kind of magnetic. There's enough weirdness in it that I give value to it for its quirkiness. So I'm very comfortable giving it 4 cardboard football cutouts.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go the same route. I'm going to give it a solid 4. It was just entertaining. You know, when I was 12 or whatever, 15, when I first watched it, I would have given it a 1 because I would not have caught all the subtleties, I don't think. But as an adult, you go back and watch it and there were just so many subtle things that were pretty brilliant and even maybe unintentionally funny, like the coffee pot that he walks into with the top hat that made me laugh. even though that may not have even been an intentional funny thing that they put in. But I thought it was hilarious. And so, yeah, laughs when I wasn't expecting them, laughs when I kind of was expecting them. And Kurt Russell is just an amazing, he's a national treasure, as I said before. So I'm going to give it 4 full-size cutouts of a football player. So the next thing we're going to do is choose the next movie. And I have recalibrated all of the, so that it's all random. And we will do the random number generator. We've got 200 movies now on
the list. Come on, blue chips.
All right. 79, which is, I just saw victory at 77. And I thought it was 79. Glory Road.
Glory. Oh, yeah. That's, can't remember his name, but he coaches Texas Tech, right? Against Adolph Ruff's Kentucky team.
Yeah. It's a Texas Southern or Texas Southwest.
Texas Southwest.
What became UTEP? Yeah. And this is the story about them beating the Kentucky Wildcats, right?
Yep. And Adolph,
have you seen this movie?
I have, but it's been a while. It came out in 2006.
Yeah, I have not seen this one. Yeah, this will be new for me. So I think this might be the first one that we've watched that's new to me. No, Air Bud. I can't forget about Air Bud.
He's right.
Yeah, yeah. Josh Lucas is the guy's name. Oh, John Voight's in this. So we have a...
nice.
We have another Varsity Blues alum.
Who plays Pat Riley?
That I don't know. I know that John Voight is Rupp. I don't know that...
Because I've got to look it up. Because I know that Pat Riley was on that team.
I know my dad saw Pat Riley play as a Kentucky Wildcat at Tennessee.
Maybe they couldn't use... I don't see Pat Riley. Oh, there he is. Wes Brown. Don't know who that is.
He's at a party right
some
now.
Some Hallmark movie guy, yeah. It looks like. Oh, but he's going to be in We Are Marshall when we get to that.
Oh, so. Good. Yeah, he's at a party right now telling somebody that he played Pat Riley in Glory Road. Yeah,
exactly. Cool. So that's it. Glory Road next time. So once again, thank you for listening to Slow Pitch, where all of our cleats stay white.
Amen.
Buy me some peanuts and crackers, Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball.